empowering and Dr. Bostrock is a speaker, leadership, and strategy consultant. She is the founder of the Fierce Foundation, an offer of Fierce, transform your life in the face of adversity, 5 minutes at a time. And the co-author of Academic and Educational Entrepreneurship. And she has books on the table back there. They are $20 a piece. She serves as a delegate for the Commission on the Status of Women with the United Nations, advocating for global women's empowerment. Her work is deeply rooted in empowering others to overcome challenges and succeed. Carolyn is passionate about fostering respectful dialogue and understanding, especially in the face of differing viewpoints, believing in the power of effective communication and leadership to bridge divides and build a stronger community. Dr. Bostrock?
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. I thank you for that introduction, and also I grew up here. So I grew up in the Midwest, actually La Crosse, Wisconsin. You may have heard of it. And I was sharing earlier right before that I had a short stint in San Diego while I had to move to San Diego for my grandmother who was dying of cancer. And so we moved to San Diego in order to get her some radical treatment, which did not work. And then we moved back. So I've been in La Crosse, Wisconsin most of my life, although I've traveled a lot of the world. But this is my home. And so, and you may recognize my last name, which is my married name. It's a Winona name. So I'm honored to be here. I appreciate what you do. And I want to just go into a bit of why I do what I do and our topic this morning. So, on this human journey, my lived experiences are ones that can be translated into a series of storms. Now, in life, we're either in a storm, just got out of a storm, or heading right into one. And it's not necessarily that life offers us less storms, we just learn how to navigate better. My storms that I'll share this morning are not necessarily uncommon, and which is unfortunate. However, through my storms, I've discovered a disruptive advantage, which I call adverse advantage. What has occurred is a blend of ancient wisdom with modern knowledge. And when curated, but also saves lives. My storms began at age 4, when an overly friendly neighbor stole my innocence from me and continued to abuse me for the duration of time that he lived next door. In that moment, that's where my definition of love began, and it's also how I saw the world. Now, with that kind of hurt and those secrets that I had to hold, I felt like I was on an island alone, out to sea. Like an island with a palm tree, solitude. And there are secrets I had to bury deep in the sand, which created my definition of love. Now, growing up, my father was like a sea captain out to sea. He followed work all over in which to send money home. And most of my childhood, he did not live at home. Our mother, she navigated mental illness and physical illness, one feeding the other, which created many storms. Storms of instability, and we never really knew what to expect. So my sister and I grew up navigating different storms. Now, growing up, some days were wonderful. The nice cool breeze and fun, laughter, tickle fights. And some days the clouds came in. And we had to learn how to be emotional meteorologists as different types of emotional and physical abuse ensued, while my mother tried to self-medicate her untreated mental illness. Well, my sister and I, we knew how to navigate these storms, and we would try in every way in which to try and bring down that hurricane from a Category 5 to a Category 1 and take the lesser beating. Now, the chaos that I experienced in my young childhood is not uncommon, unfortunately. And what can be described in the concepts of adverse childhood experiences. Now, adverse childhood experiences are a study that came out of Kaiser Permanente along with the CDC. And the citizens who have at least one adverse childhood experience, meaning adversities that you've experienced between the ages of 1, birth to 18, be it abuse, neglect, maltreatment. Now, there's a connection to our well-being with adverse childhood experiences. With a score of 4, you are likely to experience some type of heart disease, perhaps, maybe cancer, to emanate within your body, to be created because of these stressors and choices that come along. If you have a score of 6 or more, you are more likely to be able to knock off 20 years off your life compared to someone who does not have the higher scores. These adverse childhood experiences, what happens is someone with these scores of 4 to 6 are 2.5 times more likely then to create these types of diseases in their body. Now, when I think back about my childhood and adverse childhood experiences and the choices that were made, my childhood, like I shared, was not come back until dark, the things of my generation. And it was fun. We did have fun. And there were also horrible storms. When it was good, it was really good. And when it was bad, it was really bad. That is a commonality with mental health challenges. Now, for me, at the age of 16, after breaking up with my first boyfriend and navigating the storms that I had dealt with at home, I felt the void of love, and I found myself in the middle of an emergency room, surrounded by providers seeking to pump the 25 sleeping pills I took and try to numb the pain. Unsuccessful, as you can see, I returned home to my little sister, who was angry, of course, and crying. And she screamed at me, "Don't you ever try and leave me." And in that moment, I realized that my life is not only my own. I'm a light for another human. And I promised her that I would not try and leave again, but it didn't mean I stopped running. And I ran right into the arms of a man who reflected my self-love. I became pregnant and married. Now my spouse, he loved me so much that he would monitor my food intake so that I would stay thin and still attractive to him. My husband loved me so much that he'd monitor my time in 15-minute increments, and the amount of time that he felt it took me to get home from work, and if it deviated by even just 5 minutes, he'd require an inspection, and upon passing that inspection, he would reward me with his passion, because being married is consent. This was my definition of love. My spouse was adamant on letting me know what a good wife was. And he would ensure that no one could love me as much as he did. And if I were to think of ever leaving, he would deliver swiftly on the love that we had. And he would end my life and his own so that we could be together forever. Now that's what I understood love to be until my daughter was born. Now, my little girl, As a teen mom, I had no idea what I was doing. And this little girl screamed for 2 months straight. Now, that's what some people might call colic, and other people might call good luck. Now, my daughter, at about 2 months old, I remember it was about 4 a.m. I'm exhausted from a baby who hadn't stopped crying for who knows how long, and from a spouse who was very determined to educate me on what a good wife was, to volumes that would invite the neighbors to call the police over and over again. And it was about 4 a.m, and I remember sitting next to the window, and I was rocking my little girl, and I started to pray. I started to pray to anyone who might listen. Please send me a sign. Because I promised I wouldn't give up, but I don't know how much I can handle, and I am drowning on this island. I haven't seen the sun in years. And in that moment, my daughter stopped crying. She opened her little eyes, and she looked at me into mine as if looking into my soul, telling me, I'm your sign. And there I was, standing in line in the Salvation Army. I'd left between the 15-minute increments that my spouse would check on me to make sure that I was doing what I had been told to do. And I escaped with my baby, 2 boxes, and a toddler bed. And there I was. Now, as I'm standing there in line, the sounds, the lights, the smells, which triggered a lot of flashbacks of things in my short lifetime that never should have happened. You see, my mother, who was had mental illness, it was also, she self-medicated. So she self-medicated with overeating, overspending, and hoarding. Now, when I was growing up, my mother was a hoarder, and I had a path from my bedroom to my bathroom. Now, as you can imagine, no bigger than this aisle, and the smell of cat urine, the smell of cockroach spray, and maybe a mouse that scattered by here or there. My mother also had a kind heart, and she tried very hard. And she would help people who were down on their luck and invite them into our home. Now, some of those people appreciated a warm meal and a place to sleep despite the hordes, and some of them sought to abuse it. I taught my sister how to hide in the hordes, offering myself in her place for those strangers who saw my body as a human, my body as an opportunity. And so standing in line at the Salvation Army with those smells and those lights and those sounds, I was immobilized by fear of the unknown and far too many memories that had my body like standing in like headlights, a deer in headlights. But I knew I needed to do something. And there was a wonderful social worker who was talking to me, kind of like I couldn't necessarily hear her because of just the vibrations in my brain and the freezing. And kind of like Charlie Brown. I don't know how many people know Charlie Brown, but the parents, they sound woom, 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 woom. As I'm standing there, I couldn't make out any words besides, you can do this one day at a time. And I heard that one day at a time, and I thought, I can't do one day. I can go back. I know how to navigate storms. I can do that. But I don't know if I can do this. A whole day seemed like way too much. Then I saw a clock, just like the one in the back of the room. And I thought, what if I made a game? What if I could get through the next 5 minutes? So I took a deep breath. I focused on that clock. And I took one step for my daughter, because I knew, fast forward 18 years, statistically, if I had stayed or went back, I would be giving her to a man who was her father with a different face? No. Because sometimes you have to borrow the love you have for another human until your self-love catches up. I borrowed her love. I borrowed the love that I had for her, and I stepped forward in that line just 5 minutes. Breathe, focus. I took fierce action to do something for her. Soon enough, I got registered for school. I got a job. I got a safe place to sleep. I moved into low-income housing, and I busted my buns. I used the love I had for her in which to be able to move out of low-income housing in a year, master's degree. And soon enough, through those 5 minutes, I was able to transition the love that I had for my daughter to maybe learn how to love myself. 5 minutes at a time, breathe, focus, and taking fierce action, I learned to grow. And I learned to go inward using this methodology 5 minutes at a time. I built my career. I helped raise my little sister. My mother, she ended up leaving. My dad is still on the road. I raised both of them with no child support. And with this methodology, I was able to educate myself, and I was able to build resilience and define a new future. I've gone from standing in line at the Salvation Army to today standing in many lines serving, giving food, helping people out of their dark places. I've been able to go from seeking advice from a PhD to save my life, to becoming a PhD to help save the lives of many. I've been able to continue on because life doesn't necessarily give us less storms. However, with this particular tool that I invented out of survival and thousands of women use today in which to thrive, I've been able to handle more storms. For me, the storms didn't stop. After 14 years, I finished my master's, and I was blessed with two more children. I got remarried, and my daughter was adopted by the only father she's ever known, and then now my two boys as well. And after a 14-year relationship, storms continued, and my relationship ended in divorce. That's a whole other kind of storm to navigate as you're trying to co-parent, as you're trying to learn how to live again, when all the dreams of growing old with someone surrounded by grandkids is gone in a second. Let's talk about a new kind of storm. And yet, I took the same tool and I used it in which to take the adversity and flip it into an advantage, in which to go inward and learn how to love myself on a whole new level. Practicing that 5 minutes at a time, my husband, I call him endearingly, we celebrate birthdays together, we do holidays together, we talk almost every other day. Why? For the future of our children. It's not easy. But this is how I've navigated my storms and have helped others do the same. Would you like to learn? All right. Go ahead and everyone sit up, put your feet on the ground. And what we're going to do is just take a deep breath. A nice deep belly breath. Many, over 1,000 hospitals in the nation, and it's called HeartMath. HeartMath is a science-based way of breathing and coming to consciousness and coming to present state. So as you breathe in, however you so choose, we could go Wim Hof, but we're not going to do that today. What we are to do is just take a deep breath in, and when you breathe in, imagine breathing into your heart, and then breathe out through your heart. And as you breathe in, think of a beautiful, bright blue light that comes in through your heart. And then breathe out through your heart. And try one more time, in through your heart. Imagine that air coming in through your heart, creating a beautiful, bright, vibrant light. And exhale out through your heart. Now, the science behind using heart math technologies is what it does is it increases by 23% the oxygen that you're bringing into your body. And what you're doing is you're bringing yourself into a present state. You're able to improve your emotional regulation. And by doing this, you're able to manage stress and improve your emotional well-being. So that's the first step, B for breathe. The second step is F for focus. Calm, focus on a long-term goal. So thinking of a year out, where do you want to be? What would you love to do? Would you like to advocate for children? Would you like to break barriers in the workplace for women? Or is it overcoming personal adversity? Looking out to what those goals are and then reverse engineering it down from 1 year, 6 months, 90 days, down to this week. What do you need to do in order to move the needle on that goal? All the way down to the next 5 minutes, especially when you're in that space of emotional distress. When you're able to get mindful, you're able to make a clear decision that serves you versus something that does not serve you. And then you start to stack. And the third thing, fierce action. F for fierce action. So breathe, focus, fierce action. Fierce action is taking that adversity, that emotion. We are humans. We are supposed to have emotion. But how might we use those emotions as fuel to move us in a direction that serves us? And as we do so, what we're doing is we're creating new neural pathways. We're learning how to build resilience. And within those new neural pathways, we're able to make a change for ourselves, in our body, and for those who also need that support. So, in closing, breathe, focus, and fierce action. It is a tool that you can use 5 minutes at a time in which to move forward on the goals in the communities that you choose to serve and build that resilience 5 minutes at a time and rewrite your story. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for a couple of questions. Does anyone have a question? At the beginning of your story, when you left your first husband, how old were you? And did he try to come after you and find you?
Yes. So when I left, I didn't leave immediately. It took time because I had to break down the mental barriers I'd created for myself. And when I did leave, yes, he came after me. So I was 19 when I had my daughter. I was almost 21 when I tried to leave. And he came after me, yes. He went to jail, yes. And the restraining order is about as strong as the paperwork it's written on. So it was very frightening. He stalked me and was able to tell me what I was having for dinner, and it was very frightening. But then after about when my daughter was 8, he gave up his parental rights finally because he didn't pay child support, and he wanted to see me, not her. So soon, and once he realized that there were other people that were trying to deliver her for the visitation, and he stopped coming to visit.
We have one more question.
One of the things that we have had in the past in our UU order of service are the sources and traditions that we draw on. And I'm just wondering what philosophies, or if there's a specific religious practice or practices that you like to draw on, and who you might read, who gives you inspiration, who fills your well.
Yeah. So over the years, as I've evolved, I've been able to source, depending on the, you know, at each, I feel that as we are trying to continually on this human journey improve every day, we're not the same as we were 5 minutes ago. And so as I evolve, my sources evolve. I practice mindfulness. I'm certified in what's called unified mindfulness, equanimity. And I, for me growing up, I believe in God. I believe in a higher source. And I also believe in humanity and that we're all connected. And so gratitude, I practice mindfulness. My boys practice mindfulness. And we've been pay it forward and elevate our vibration. So I don't know if that's any specific thing, but that's what we do. So as far as sources, Shenzhen Yang is where I practice mindfulness through. And let's see, other sources, I guess I just continually read about 30 books a year. So I like to take in information and see as I grow. Margaret Wheatley is a beautiful one, if anyone's heard of her.
Do we have any more questions?
Can you tell us what your PhD is in and what your day-to-day work and practice looks like as you're working with people?
Yeah. So my PhD is in organizational leadership. And what I do in my practice is, why do people do what they do? And how do we help people move into a direction that's for the greater good? So it's the same methodology. So my background is also in positive psychology and appreciative inquiry. So how might we bring people from all different walks of life in which to move forward in a direction that serves? And so the same methodology that I'm taught in is the same methodology that we use at the UN around global climate change, around different heated topics, if you can imagine. And for example, 3 weeks ago, I was in Harlem serving in inner city schools, and how might we help the leaders in those schools fill them with tools for navigating hard times? How might we allow for conversation in a safe space? And how might we create a strategy to move forward in order to serve children in the best way possible. How I use that is I have, you may have heard of the Children's Business Fair. So that's one, I serve children. So the Children's Business Fair I brought to the state of Wisconsin for the first time 3 years ago. It was in a parking lot within the wind and the rain, and we're supporting little kids that are ages 6 to 14 who want to have little businesses. And we did it. And we give out awards, we give out scholarships. Now fast forward 3 years later, I had just in April 75 little kids ages 6 to 14 from all over, all school districts, and they have their little businesses that they're selling, all amazing things. They have actual businesses that they sell all year. They sell candles, they sell services, they sell woodworking, they sell all these things. And then this next year, it'll be probably 100 to 150 kiddos, so you have to come down and support the children. And we give out scholarships for them, especially the ALIS population children, so asset limited income contingent children of parent or families. And we give them scholarships in which to build their little businesses and encourage entrepreneurialism. I also write books. I also speak and facilitate and teach leadership courses, particularly leadership and inclusivity. And then, of course, once a year, well, throughout the year, virtually, and then once a year in New York at the Commission of Status of Women, I serve women in women's rights and women's issues as we discuss, but then also collaborate with other NGOs and nonprofits. And my daughter is now 26. She She owns her own home, the gift of education. So I taught her, I was able to teach her not only education, but mentorship. So education, and I don't mean just traditional education, I mean education from community, from learning from people and mentors who were like, hey, you know what, I did this, don't do it. Mentoring, how do I get to where I want to be? And then now she owns her own home. She house hacks, if you know what that means. So she rents to other people in which to pay for her mortgage and be able to give her more flexibility. And she's an absolutely beautiful human and has none of the things I went through, zero. Her biggest problem is, just last week, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go sing karaoke or if I'm going to go get tacos at Pato Azul. Like, it's not that hard. No. These are her challenges. So I think I did an okay job.